They compete hard on the field and play to win. But in real life, they serve a greater purpose.
It's more than a game.
Welcome to Faith on the Field show with hosts Rob Motti, Doug Horton, and Pastor Kyle Horner on 610 Sports ESPN Radio.
And welcome to Faith on the Field show presented by Eastern University, 610 Sports ESPN Radio. I'm Rob Motti with Doug Horton, and Phillies chaplain Robert Pinckney is filling in for Pastor Kyle Horner. We're going to do things a little bit different this week with this episode, and we're going to go right to our special guest who is joining us. He is one of the all-time best closers in Major League Baseball history. His name is Billy Wagner. Billy is on the Hall of Fame ballot for the third straight year. I am a Hall of Fame voter. I voted for Billy last year. I will be voting for him again this year. So before we get to the important stuff, before we talk about faith, let's talk to Billy about the Hall of Fame and about the Hall of Fame ballot. Hey, Billy, how are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great. Billy, you have 422 career saves, a 231 ERA, 1,200 strikeouts, a whip under one. You're on the ballot for the third straight year. I voted for you, as I said at the top. I think it's ridiculous. You've only received 10.5% and 10.2% of the votes. You definitely belong in Cooperstown. I personally have a problem with the voting structure, and my biggest issue is that 10 max rule, because when I look at this ballot this year, it's crowded. There's 13 to 15 guys that I want to give worthy consideration to, serious consideration to. I want to start, though, with Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, and maybe you can help me out. I voted for them. I will vote for them. I think they belong in there, and I think it would make the ballot a little bit easier once they get into the Hall of Fame. What is your stance on guys like Barry and Roger?
Well, I know them both. I've always been fans of theirs. And I think I'm caught in the middle sometimes because I believe if there is adequate evidence that you have taken a PED, and I mean, I think if there's solid evidence that you've done it, even though if you haven't been convicted, or I think it's really hard to say that, you know, you didn't do something wrong. I really think that should be in there. But I mean, I think you got to have evidence. I don't think word of mouth is good. I don't think we can sit there and use speculation. And I mean, believe me, I understand what everybody says about Barry as far as having speculations about his body, his head, and all that stuff. But I mean, and I know there's stuff out there, but nobody's convicted him. I don't know how you come out there and say, you know, just vote the dude in. Vote him and Clemens in and be done with it. I mean, they were great. And I mean, you know, I mean, to me, for somebody like me, it upsets me because those, you know, the guys who did it, the guys who cheated, that they, you know, they're the ones that are getting all this attention, and the guys who went out there and strapped it on every day and did it the right way and didn't make excuses and didn't have to use excuses of pressure and things like that. They just went out and did their job, and you know, I think, you know, it bothers us because they get to reap the reward. It's the, oh well, I cheated and I got away with it, and you know, or I went on TV or radio and cried, and everybody felt sorry for me, and you know, those are the things that bother me. I mean, I feel like I'm a Hall of Famer. I have no idea. I don't even know how to even look at those things because. I mean, I don't know what it takes to be a Hall of Famer. I don't know what that means anymore because, you know, there's so many different ideas of what's important and, you know, what you got to have. And as a closer, I don't know. There was no benchmark for what you needed to be to, you know, my job was to go out and get three people out to secure a game. Now, I mean, a lot of times that was very interesting, but I mean, the whole point was to help your team win the game. And, you know, I didn't, it's kind of like Jack Morris. We didn't realize there were style points involved in this. So, and I think, you know, that's from my standpoint, you know, it's frustrating. I mean, still Eric Gagne still irritates the heck out of me knowing that he gets to sit up there as one of the 55 consecutive save opportunities, and he pretty much just told everybody, I cheated and I did this. Wow. That bothers me. Wow. That bothers me. I mean, when you look at Mariano and you look at Trevor and you look at Smoltz, these guys went out there and they were tremendous. They were awesome, naturally awesome. To now have to sit there and have that. That those are things that are, to me, are very frustrating. And, you know, sometimes being on the ballot and knowing that these guys were speculated and had things going against them and, or admitted it, you know, it does get a little frustrating.
And you mentioned this, when you don't have proof of it, when you don't know definitively who did what, as a voter, for me, because we don't have that criteria, we don't know who did what, and they really don't give you the rules, I can look back and say, well, maybe some of the guys in the past, the scrutiny wasn't as intense on them, and maybe they did things that enhanced their performance, like amphetamines, for example, in the 60s and 70s. That helped guys with their hand and eye coordination. Well, hand and eye coordination is crucial element for you as a hitter. I believe that can help you hit a baseball a lot better than if you're just a muscled up, jacked up dude. Because I can go down to the gym and get a guy who's can bench press 600 pounds and he can't hit a Billy Wagner 100 mile an hour fastball. But I get a guy with improved hand eye coordination and it may be able to help him. So that's why when I look at the ballot, I go, I can only vote the numbers. I don't know who's already in the Hall of Fame, who's done what in his life, and what he used to get there, and that's the criteria I use. But I know a lot of voters look at it differently, and that's why Barry's not in there and Roger's not in there right now.
And that's called the logjam too.
Yes.
With the balance. I mean, you know, I play with Jeff Kent, and I mean when during Jeff Kent's run, I mean MVP, World Series. I mean so many things. I mean he was a shoo-in to be a Hall of Famer. And now it's like, you know, it's like, you know, not even in the real discussion. And you're kind of like, what? I mean, this is a guy who did tremendous things. I mean, the whole guidelines to the Hall of Fame are, to me, almost skewed because there used to be so many different, you know, you had to reach a certain amount of wins and you had to reach a certain, I mean, you had to, I mean, unless you died early, you had to have 3,000 hits and you had to have 500 home runs and you had to have 300 wins and you had to have all these trademarks. I mean, as a closer, there was never anything to really, you know, to judge by. I mean, Raleigh, Eck, all these guys. I mean, the guy who had the most saves, you know, Lee Smith forever, before Trevor and them. And I mean, that was, you know, that was kind of the mark. And I mean, when he doesn't get put in, I mean, being the best is being consistent.
Yeah.
That's the hard part. That's a hard thing to judge. It's the consistency of doing it year in and year out. And so I think, you know, the Hall of Fame. I don't know how. That's why when they ask me, "What do I believe I'm a Hall of Famer?" I could tell me what that is. I mean,
well,
I have no
idea.
Well,
you know what, Billy? As a voter, I tell you this: you are a Hall of Famer because I look at those numbers and I see the. I said the 422 saves, the 2.31 ERA. And, you know what people don't realize when they look at you sometimes? You could have probably continued your last year at 38 years old in 2010 for the Braves. You had 37 saves and a 1.43 ERA, struck out 104 people. What made you walk away from the game at that point? Even though you're 38, you were still on the top of your game.
I was, you know, my kids. I'm a family guy. I'm about my kids and being with my family. And my kids were getting to a point of middle school, and you know, and I just felt like that's something. My dad wasn't around all the time because I come from a split marriage and I live with my aunt and uncle and I moved all around. And I felt like it's very important for me to be a father figure more than going out there and being an all-star or going out there and pitching another year. And my kids even kid me about, you know, probably not, I could have played or I should have played. I should have done this. I should have done that. But if I'm judged because I didn't play two more years or I didn't do this, then I'm okay with it. If that's how you're going to judge me, I'm cool with that because my kids come way before the Hall of Fame. But if you're really going to judge me, there's really only one stat to judge me on, and I just judge me on the league hitting 187. I mean, if you want to judge me on that, because there's nobody else that's done that. And I mean, we can talk about not having innings, and I guess 100 more innings, maybe they would have hit 190 or whatever. I mean, you can judge me, but the whole thing is to judge me on the book. So if a thousand, if I had to have 1,000 innings, or I had to have, then that's fine. Call it what it is. But I had more stats, better stats than the guys that had those innings. So if that's the case, and if you wanna sit there and do those things, then I'm fine. But my kids will always come way before the awards and accomplishments.
And that's exactly why we have you on the show tonight, Billy, because baseball is just a game. You played it exceptionally well, but at the end of the day, it's just a game. It's what you did for a living. But you also know that God had a greater purpose for your life. So tell us about being raised in a Christian home and who influenced you the most.
Well, I was raised with quite a few people. Came from a split home when I was five and moved in with my grandparents. Both sets of grandparents were heavy into church and Christ, and so I got a heavy dose of that. But I mean, there was that point where, for me, that being on welfare or being, you know, moving around with my mom and dad and not getting along with the step parent or and stuff, that, you know, you start to question your faith and stuff. But there's a point where, for me, I could see God doing something. I could see God preparing me for something. I always said baseball was going to allow me to be on a pedestal, but that was what it was for. God didn't want me to be the best baseball player. He wasn't worried about that. It was what I was going to do with that opportunity with my faith, and not waver and not forget where I came from. And you know, and that was another part of allowing me to step away from the game, knowing that I know that I could have played another year or two. That's beyond the point, but it was the point of being able to sit there and now show my kids how to be a better man, to teach them how to not make the mistakes that I made, and be there to have the discussions when they have their girlfriend or they have their first breakup, or, you know, how to drive the car or how to do these things. You know, there's only a certain amount of times you get to do these things. And, you know, my faith, you know, was tested through the game with the temptations of a million things that comes up in a pro athlete's life, with just the things that are around you that are materialistic. So it was important for me to be able to pull back and show my kids that, you know, this was important. This, you know, God showed me that my family was more important than going out and pitching another year. But I don't want to downgrade that. 16 years of my life, I enjoyed every bit of competing and playing and playing that game. It was, I mean, I came from nothing with welfare, and God blessed me with an opportunity to have a left arm that allowed me to go out and make a tremendous living, but having also an influence on a lot of people.
Let me ask you about that left arm, because there's so many different stories in your life that are testimonies to your faith. But you were born right-handed, and you had to teach yourself how to throw left after you broke your right arm twice, and you ended up becoming a guy who throws 100 miles an hour with a non-natural left hand. That's a special blessing that God gave you. Was there a point when you realized that this blessing that the Lord gave you, you needed to use that platform to give Him all the glory?
Without a doubt, there was not a day that I didn't thank God for the opportunity to play the game, to be somebody that was going to be able to inspire and motivate and be there to be you know, a light for Him. And not all the time was it that sweet, and did I go about it the right way. But I know that as a Christian, being able to say that I'm sorry and can you, dear Lord, can you forgive me, is part of being the true Christian and having understanding that you're not perfect. So I think by breaking my arm and going out left-handed, I think it was just his way of saying, hey, you know, this is your podium. This is where you're going to speak and show the world how awesome I am, because I can do all things. I can do anything. I can make anybody do anything. And so, he took a nobody like me, was 5 foot nothing, 100 and nothing, and I went out and was able to be one of the best closers in baseball for a while.
You know, Bill, you talk about the platform that potentially you could have. You used this platform and you wrote a book in 2013 called A Way Out, Faith, Hope, and Love of the Game. In that, you kind of mentioned that there was some fuel that you had to move your career forward, where somebody had said to you, you will never amount to anything, you are not good enough. And that's kind of what fueled you as you continued to go through your career. So can you tell us a little bit about how you used your platform to write this book and what motivated you to do that?
Well, I felt like there were so many things going around the game about with the young people that are trying to come up, and kids were angry. There are just so many things that I wanted to speak on as far as just allowing that hate and that anger, if you had that, to be channeled into a better way. I used it from to face hitters. I used that anger to direct it to throw it as hard as I could to get people out, those things. And I felt like, that was my purpose, to show that through everything that I had been through physical abuse, all the hurdles and obstacles to get through, that book was something to tell somebody that might be going through something that it was similar, to say, hey, you've got to trust. You got to trust in your faith, and having faith is the ultimate trust, knowing that God is going to lead you through this. And sometimes the darkest times are going to, that's your test, that's your burden to bear, to get through and to be that spokesman for God. And I felt like my career, the ups and downs, the way I handled things poorly, immaturely, allowed me to write that book and say, hey, you know what, this is not how I should have handled this. And this is how, when I'm coaching these kids and talking to my kids, I'm like, you do not want to handle it like I did. This is a better way. And all these things that I went through was based on, to put in that book, was to tell people, hey, you know what, I was not always right. I was not perfect. I wasn't this, I wasn't that, but I know that God loves me, and that I love God, and that, you know, he is forgiving and powerful, and he has put grace on me to allow me to be humble. And he has humbled me many a time, not only on the baseball field, but at home. So I think it's, that book was a combination of, do's and don'ts, and saying thank you to God for the opportunities.
One of the things that you had to overcome in your family is something that's about as awful of a crime that's going to happen to anyone, is the double murder of your in-laws. Was that something that maybe tested your faith, or how did you rely on your faith for yourself and your family and for your wife at a time like that?
Well, I felt like, I think at that point, God showed me. It was awful. It was the mm-hmm. worst thing, one of the worst things I've ever. I was in Wichita, Kansas, and had just gotten put on the 40-man. And I'd called my wife to tell her, and she called her dad to tell him that, I was probably going to go to Houston in September, and we wanted him to go. And if it wasn't for that, she would not have talked to him, period. So it was so hard to get that phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning and hear what's going on, and then to get on an airplane and fly to Dallas, then to Jackson, and then take an 18-hour drive with your wife back to her hometown, knowing all the emotions I couldn't be emotional. Mm-hmm. I couldn't be that. I had to be there and be the one saying, hey, whatever, baby, I'm here for you. You know, I think it's really, you know, God's trust and faith and everything that he set me up for, to be able to be there for her and, you know, just to be what little help I could be.
One of the things, Billy, that I always appreciated about you when you were playing in Philly is that you were real, you were genuine, you were authentic. You said what was on your mind. You told it like it is, and sometimes maybe that got you in trouble. And oftentimes, people people don't want to hear the truth. But it as Christians, it's important to speak the truth. And one of the things that I see as I look on your Twitter bio is I see that genuine, that sincerity out of you because, listen, we always fail every day as Christians. One way or another, I think it's impossible to live up to the standards of Christ. But you're not shy about saying that. And it says in your bio, struggling Christian. Can you explain a little bit? Because I feel that if we can't admit to ourselves that sometimes we struggle in our faith, we're lying to ourselves. And God knows the difference. He knows the truth. What does it mean to you to be a struggling Christian?
Well, to fall short every day. I feel like I fall short every day in being the man I want to be or the Christian I want to be, because a lot of times I'm a little too type A. And so I get frustrated with, whatever. I mean, whatever the day that happens, sometimes it's just, you know, not having the patience or the understanding at times because I'm so, I guess motivated or passionate because I'm I was a passionate player, as a passionate dad and husband. And so I think when, you know, those things get together sometimes, I get a little frustrated. And in the times that I need to step back and go, Lord, please let me have a little bit more patience in what's going on and, show me help me have some wisdom and how to handle these situations. And, you know, and what's helped me is going through a lot of the baseball and family. But, you know, once you have kids, you kind of you realize that there's a lot of ways you just can't handle things. It's funny. I've got an 11-year-old who's my youngest, and he's on the iPad, and he watches a lot of YouTube Minecraft things. And all of a sudden, he starts YouTubing Billy Wagner. Well, you know, probably 2/3 of it is okay. And then all of a sudden, there's the New York stint where I'm telling them, "Not why are you interviewing me?" And all of a sudden he's looking at me, and I'm like, "You should not be looking at me." but that goes back to that point. You know what? It's probably good that he sees that because now it's on me to explain why and what I should have done different and how I should have talked. Even though these things I probably didn't make. I mean, there's a million reasons why I'm probably not going to get in the Hall of Fame, but one of them was how I handled myself with certain media guys. I know that it's a popularity contest with this, and so I know I didn't handle myself because I was truthful and upfront, and I wasn't Tom Glavin or David Wright or guys like that who were they could talk around the situation. I was the guy that went through the situation. And so those are for me terrible learning experiences, but it was probably something that has helped me to talk to kids that I've coached get drafted, that have situations going on in their life that have allowed me to go, you know what? Let me speak from experience. You know, this is probably not how you want to do this. And so as bad as it was, those were teaching points that God was putting in my life to help someone else. And that's, I believe God has given me, that's how I am been able to help others and show my faith and have a positive influence from some of the negative things that I've done.
Amen. That is Amen. Billy Wagner. He should be a Hall of Fame baseball player, I feel. I will be voting for Billy. I'm going to vote for you every time I see you on a ballot. But you know what? You're already a Hall of Famer in the kingdom of heaven. That's what's most important in life is becoming, is being a Hall of Famer in the eyes of God. And we really appreciate you taking some time out here to join us and to share a little bit about your story and your faith journey. Thank you very much, and we'll definitely talk to you again down the road.
Sure thing. I appreciate it, guys. God bless you.
Hey, thanks, Bill.
Take care, Billy. And that is Billy Wagner talking about his faith. You know, as he was saying what he was saying about the media and the popularity contest, it's unfortunate because that's what a lot of times it ends up being that way. And that's why I feel as much of an honor as it is for me to vote in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. I don't feel that we should be the ultimate deciders. I think there should be a committee. Like in the NFL, they have a committee of about X amount of voters. But that could also get a little bit stale too as well because they didn't put T.O. in the Hall of Fame last year, and he's absolutely a Hall of Fame player. I think if they rotate that committee and include former players, maybe senior members of the baseball writers, maybe different guys in management in baseball, not just leave it on the baseball writers, because I think there's a lot of biases.
So they don't have no former players voting?
On the current ballot system, the way it's mm-hmm. just the baseball writers. Now, once the way Jack Morris got in and Alan Trammell got mm-hmm. in, that is a veterans committee. So that's comprised of different people.
Okay.
But this ballot is all writers.
Oh, wow.
So, Rob, you know, not to put you on the spot, and I'm not going to ask you for any specific names, but are there guys that potentially have burned you in the past or that you potentially wouldn't vote for how you've been treated? But I know there's guys that you respect more for how they acted, and I think you look at more on the positive side. But do you ever have a situation where a guy just really burns you and you're like, you know what, like that, you know, I struggle with that guy.
So in other words, what you're asking him, did you put your personal feelings in front of the numbers that the guy put up?
I mean, if you want to interpret that way, yeah. Robert, I mean, that's completely fine too.
I'm completely
I love how Rob thinks, you know, so I mean, I put him on the spot. So.
I'm completely opposite because let's all be honest about Barry Bonds was not the most accommodating person.
Okay.
And I think that hurts Barry Bonds. Also, in addition to the fact that people suspect the steroid use and everything else. But I don't, I just, I'm,
you
I
look past
Barry,
that anyway.
I look past the fact that he may have been a jerk to people. I look past the fact that they are a lot of mounting evidence that he used some sort of performance-enhancing drugs. I look at the fact that the guy's the all-time home run champion, king, and he was the best hitter I ever saw.
Mm. So in your words, your criteria for who you would vote for has nothing to do with personality then?
No, it can't be. It shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But that's mm-hmm. me. It shouldn't be, and I don't know if any other – I don't know if other writers, if they're honest – I'm sure, as Billy just said, that it may be a little bit of, well, yeah, this guy blew me off.
But I would think
guy.
That would be a small percentage of the overall writers.
That's what
though,
I was about
it?
To
and
ask.
How would that affect it?
Now, for example, when I reach out to Billy to do mm-hmm. this show, right, I'm planning on voting for him.
Okay.
Now, if he said, oh, I don't want to be on, or didn't text me back and said, hey, I don't want to be on, I'm still going to vote for him.
Mm.
There may be guys, I don't know this for sure, but there may be guys who may take that as a slight.
Mm.
I don't take things like that as a slight because I feel that you got to be objective. You
mm-hmm.
have to analyze the situation and just be as objective as you can be. And that's why when I look at the guys who are suspected of using performance-enhancing drugs, I even vote for Sammy Sosa, mm-hmm. who everyone looks at and goes, well, this guy was like a 15-home run guy and then suddenly gained 40-50 pounds and he's hitting 60 home runs a year mm-hmm. and he's got over 600. And my argument is, well, I don't know that Hank Aaron or Willie Mays or Willie McCovey's amphetamine use in greenies that helped them with their hand-eye coordination wasn't also a performance-enhancing supplement.
Yeah, but you got to admit that time period was phenomenal. You know, between him and McGuire, I mean, that defined that.
Didn't
those
you
couple
love
of
it?
Years. Oh, it was phenomenal.
It was
the best. And that's when you look back on baseball history during that time period, that was a very significant historical moment. So, I mean, that
I think
be
it saved baseball
that.
At one point because after
really
that
did.
Strike,
right.
sure. after yeah. that 94 season was wiped out. People were shying away from baseball, were leaving, but they were mad at the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then and when was it? 98, 97?
Yeah, we were in college at that time, right?
Whatever. I mean, so
I just remember trying to like find a place to watch it.
Everybody wanted to see Maguire, Sosa. And you don't care at that point. You don't care because also the way baseball policed it wasn't done very well. And then I also look at guys, like I look at a guy like Manny Ramirez, who I thought was one of the best right-handed hitters, maybe him, Albert Pujols, of our generation. There's a lot of supplements that these guys cannot take that the three of us can walk into a supplement place and take over the counter.
So let me ask you this, Rob. So what you said that the way baseball policed it. So do you think it should be more like on baseball?
Yes.
Yeah. That's what I was looking. Yeah,
I think baseball reaped the benefits.
Yeah.
Of these guys
because they made millions and millions of dollars.
The ratings went up.
It saved baseball. It really did. I 100% agree with
they
that.
They reaped the benefits. They allowed guys to get away with whatever they were doing, and then all of a sudden, when there's a big uproar about it, it changes. Things change.
Yeah,
and the fact that we really can't know who did what because there are guys who have been voted in. The eye test, I think, should never be used because you can't look at someone and be like, oh man, he's big, he's jacked up, he must have been a user.
Yeah.
I have never taken anything illegal, right? Never. But I've taken many things that guys can't, that they would be banned for doing.
Has it always been natural stuff or, you know,
I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, I've taken stuff that has been banned by Major League Baseball, that's banned by the NFL.
Banned now. Okay.
But at the time it wasn't. So for one of them, the same stuff that Mark Maguire was taking.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
When I got up to 225 pounds, I was 225 with like 8% body fat. I was jacked on whatever Maguire was taking, but I would have been kicked out of Major League Baseball, you know. And none of it was.
We're gonna kick you out of the softball league, Rob. I mean, that's what
unless you join our team this year, not the way I hit this summer.
Come on over.
There was a lot in that Billy Wagner interview that we can get to, and we did do things a little bit differently today. There's a lot going on, and when we come back, we'll break it down and get into some more deep conversation. You are listening to Faith on the Field Show, presented by Eastern University on 610 Sports ESPN Radio. Hi, I'm Rob Motti. Every day you listen to the news, but how is that news affecting your financial world? Will an upswing in Asia affect your retirement investments? Will a drought halfway around the world dry up your income? You might not feel the immediate effects of every world event, but you do need to keep a close eye on your finances in these times of change. Rick Santella can help you do that.
Thanks, Rob. Hi, I'm Rick Santella, a financial advisor with Morgan Stanley. I'm right here in the Philadelphia region, and I have more than 35 years of experience and the resources to help you keep moving forward. Asset allocation, retirement planning, wealth management, these are all areas I can help you stay on top of.
To make an appointment with Rick, call 215-854-6018. That's 215-854-6018. Meeting with Rick Santella could be the most important event of your day.
Fall is around the corner, and what a fantastic time with football after church on Sundays and the incredible spectrum of leaves showing off a vibrant display of colors. It's also a perfect time of year to be aware of what your trees are telling you. Did you know that trees can talk to you? Example, if a tree is showing poor growth, it is making you aware that it has impacted soils or it could be suffering from improper planting techniques. Tree Awareness in Swedesboro, New Jersey has a 5-point health and wellness check that can accurately diagnose exactly what your tree is telling you. In this case, it would remedy the situation with root mulching, root invigoration, root pruning, or perhaps even root crown excavation. There's only one way to know for sure what your tree is making you aware of. Call the Tree Awareness experts at 888-429-TREE. That's 888-429-8733, and check them out at treeawareness.com for the life of your trees.
If you shake hands with difference makers around the world, you'll meet alumni from Eastern University in every profession. Our courageous graduates are CEOs, mayors, social entrepreneurs, and Pennsylvania Teacher of the Year finalists. What makes the difference? Eastern alums have been shaped by a powerful combination of academic excellence, Christian values, and professors who truly care. Join our influential community online in Center City or on the main line. Visit eastern.edu/courage.
Hey, And welcome back to Faith on the Field Show, presented by Eastern University, 610 Sports ESPN Radio. I'm Rob Motti with Doug Horton. Pastor Rob Pinckney is here in the house. And I want to talk about the aspect of struggling Christian, because I think that that's really genuine, honest, sincerity, authenticity. I think there's a lot of Christians who sometimes pretend that we're doing great and everything's fine. But, man, we all struggle, right? Life, I think, is a struggle. And the way Billy put it was pretty cool by saying, you know, I want to learn from my mistakes. I want to teach my kids when they're looking back at some of these videos and they see, well, maybe he was acting a certain way with the media or doing this or saying that. There's a lot of stuff that in our past we're going to look at and be like, we don't want our kids to maybe see how we acted.
Yeah, I thought that was a good point that he made, because he was like, hey, you know what? I don't want you watching that. But then he's like, you know what? Watch it and let's talk about
and
it.
And learn from it.
You know, and so it's kind of like, learn from my mistakes. Don't repeat it.
Yeah.
I've been through these. I learned my lessons, and now I want to pass it on to you. And so you learn through my failures. You learn through my mistakes. So I thought that was pretty mature and wise that he would take that instead of hiding it from your kids. And your kids thinking you're perfect, you know, and just kind of teach them, teachable moment at that point.
Yeah, and he touched on one thing. He said, being a true Christian, he said, is asking God to forgive us. You know, that's
over and over.
It's a daily thing. It's like a 24-hour, seven-day-a-week, 365 days of the year, asking God to forgive us over and over, because we fall so many times. Can you count the times that you fall today?
I can't count that high, Rob.
Yeah.
I can't count that high. Hey, let me ask you a question, because, yes, you know, there's some thought process, especially growing up in the church, there's always the term a PK kid.
Oh,
right?
Man. Yeah.
So you as a pastor, yeah, and, you know, your kids get to see, you know, you not in the pulpit, you know, when you're not in church, and your wife sees you in that sense. So how do you balance that specifically as a pastor, you know, when you can walk in there and your chaplain for the Philadelphia Phillies, and they rely on you for encouragement, for mentorship, and then you get home and you're tired and you're a little cranky.
Irritable.
Although I've never seen Rob cranky. Have you? I mean, I don't know.
No, man.
He's always just smiling and just awesome. So how do you handle that with, we were talking about this before, you have six kids.
Yes.
You know, and
six.
I'm sure they're all a little bit different.
Yes, sir.
So how do you handle that as a pastor to balance, you know, how you perform for other people and how you are with your own family?
And the thing about it is, I'm glad that is such a great question, man. That's a good question. The thing about it is, it's like, it was hard for me, but God had to show me who I was to myself. Like, actually, he says, show me. He said, wait a minute, you're in the pulpit preaching and you're teaching and you're leading people, and then you're coming home and telling your wife or getting mad at your wife because food not done or dinner's not done, or, you know, you get mad at the kids because they left the washing machine, they washed a small load of clothes instead of washing all the clothes. So God had to show me who I was, who I definitely was. He said, you're supposed to be the same person, you know, as you are in the church, just like you at home. Because the Bible even speaks about that charity, love, begins at home, and then it spreads abroad.
So was there a defining moment, you know, in your ministry as your kids are getting older? Because I think, you know, for me, as my kids got older, that was a huge reflection on who I am as a person. I realized how awful I was at different times. You know, like you said, you're yelling at your kids, you're doing different things, and you're like, man, like this, I'm not good, you know? And if it wasn't for the forgiveness of God and his guiding principles, and I had to do it on my own, it'd be awful. But was there a specific moment where that kind of hit you as a pastor?
Well, besides my wife hitting me.
No, you know, like, so there's always a defining moment where you're kind of hits home and you realize that at this point on, man, something's got to change.
Yeah, something. And another good question. It happened to me when I was about to do a chaplain service down at the Phillies. I mean, me and my wife had an argument. Mm-hmm. She was supposed to come down to the stadium with me, and we got into an argument. She didn't end up going, and I'm driving all the way down to Citizens Bank Park, angry as you know what. And I'm like, wow. And God was like, wait a minute, how are you going to minister to these guys, and you're angry with the guys? And what me and Rob talked about all the time, and we shared it on this show too, the transparency.
Yeah.
Don't you know that I came in those services and had to be transparent, where I had to let people know that, hey, Rob is human. This Rob, he's going to fail you every time. But we know somebody that will never leave you or forsake you or fail you. And that's what Paul reminded us too. He said, when we are weak, He is made strong. At our weakest point, that's when God, you know, is the strongest. And I was like, man, listen, I had a rough morning, but praise be to God, I made it here. And I'm going to tell y'all something about Pastor Rob this morning. I didn't want to do it, but God made me do it, you know. Yeah, we
were. That becomes your sermon.
That was right there. So
I feel that the closer, I say this all the time, the closer that we're walking with Christ, mm-hmm. or those moments when we're about to step out, or as you're about to go deliver a sermon, as you're about to go into a prison and speak to inmates, as we're about to do something bold, or about to do something different, even driving here to do this show and all the circumstances surrounding different things, I always feel that's when the enemy's always pushing harder and fighting you harder and trying to do whatever it takes to get you to plant a doubt in your mind, to put something in your head that says, hey, maybe I don't feel like doing this. I don't want to go there. I don't want to talk about that. Or how can I do that? Yes. How can I stand up there? How can I be that way? And that's when you need to rely, one, on what got you to that point.
Yep.
And really be understanding of the fact that, hey, we all struggle.
I think there's a difference when you're actually standing up and you're trying to, whether it's preach or deliver a service or just, you know, mentor some guys, you want to have a check that, hey, how am I doing?
Yeah.
And when you start to do that, you realize, hey, you know what? These frustrations that I feel, these temptations that are going on, or these difficult circumstances, like maybe that's just trying to be a distraction for me. And then it helps refocus. When you're not in those situations and you're just kind of going through your daily life, whether you're worried about work, you're worried about, you know, Robbie covering the Eagles and all the things that we have to do, sometimes we don't look at those as distractions from as a heart issue. We just look at them as annoyances in life, you know, and, you know, but but if you're preaching on Sunday, all of a sudden you look at it as the enemy's attacking me and I'm dealing with all these things. When we're not necessarily serving the Lord, we just look at them as, whatever, it's just annoying.
It's just another thing that I don't want to deal with, right?
It's a matter of perspective.
It is. And, you know, I want to get into perspective a little bit, too, as well. And we could talk about that in a few minutes. What happened this week with Carson Wentz and the Philadelphia Eagles is something I think that gives a lot of people, they need to examine the perspective there. When you look at Carson going down with an ACL injury, about as bad as it can get, at a time when the Eagles are about, they go on and they win the division, and now they're fighting for number one seed in the playoffs and their Super Bowl hopes, and the outcry in the city of Philly as they're about to now go into New York and play the New York Giants with Nick Foles as their quarterback, and people are treating it as if it was a death in the family. So I want to talk about perspective a little bit, because when you see the way Carson responds to that,
oh man,
what an incredible testimony from Carson when he puts out the video of right before, the day before he has surgery, because he's had his surgery. So before that, he puts out a video where he's talking about relying on his faith. And there's a lot of times where, if that can happen to someone, they will go in a different direction. They'll be angry. They'll be bitter. And you know he's disappointed. And you know he's upset about it. And then Jordan Matthews has ankle and knee surgery, a two-for-one, and does the same thing. He puts out an excellent testimony to Christ, thanking him, even though he's going through these trials. So we look at these athletes, and you can appreciate what they're going through, and you can feel bad for them. It wouldn't be human not to feel bad for a guy like Carson, because he's about as a great man of Christ as I've met in many years.
For a 24-year-old guy, too.
For a young guy like that. But then, when you're a fan, right, and you're making this upset you, bother you, ruin your day, ruin your week, affect the way you interact with your family, treat your kids differently because you are so bummed and feel that, well, the Eagles' playoff hopes and Super Bowl hopes just went down the tubes because Carson Wentz is out. First of all, I'll argue otherwise. As a guy who covers the NFL and covers the Eagles, I feel that Nick Foles, 29-2, 29 touchdowns, including the two in the playoffs that year, two interceptions in 2013. He is capable of great things. They do have enough around him to be able to in this NFL season? What are you afraid of, Case Keenum? I'd be afraid of Aaron Rodgers if he got in the playoffs, but they got an uphill battle.
Yeah.
So if you're an Eagles fan, take a step back. Look at the whole the crying over Carson Wentz's injury, and you're treating people around you differently. You're just upset. You're bummed. Perspective. What's the proper perspective? One is it's just a game.
Just a game.
If the guy who was injured, for as bad as he feels, can thank his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, through this most trying, difficult time in his life, what does that say to you? And another thing about all of sports and all of athletes, you know, we ignore our families at times. We push aside time that we want to spend with our kids because we're so focused on the game. We're so focused on watching whatever's happening on TV or hanging out somewhere and doing this. Family time should be your priority. Family time should be number one. Yeah. And I feel like as a sports guy, maybe people don't realize this. Maybe they feel like, well, I'm one of those, you know, oh, yeah, well, that's what you do for a living. I feel that there's a lot of people, Christians included, who cheer and scream way louder for a team that doesn't know who they are, right, than the God who saved them.
Yeah.
And they're all quiet when it comes to Jesus. You're all quiet when you go to church. You're all quiet about your faith. Mm-hmm. But you're all rooting and pumping up your fist for whatever team it is you're rooting for, and you're painting your face, and you're going out there, and you're doing all that. But when it comes time for God, and it comes time for Jesus, you're sitting on your hands. You're sitting on your hands in church, or you're not telling anybody about them. Perspective. Think about the perspective of how you treat your sports, how you treat the teams, how you treat the players, how you let that affect you, and how that changes the way you deal with the people who are most important to you. Number one, your family, and your relationship with Christ.
Amen.
Go ahead.
You good, Rob?
I'm good.
Yeah.
You got rolling. I was going to interrupt you a little earlier.
I know. I was just, like, nah. I'm feeling all congested right now. I got a cough about to come on, so take it over.
Yeah, but you had it, man.
Take it over.
So, you know, that's something I've known that you had a passion for in the past, is just how fans react to the success or failures of the team. And, you know, it really is a testimony to Carson that he has a great platform now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very sensitive to the fact that, you know, he came out with that video and he's able to say, hey, I know everybody in the Delaware Valley wants to donate their ACL to me, right? I mean, did you see that? Like, I couldn't believe it. I went on Twitter and I'm looking through this. How many people are sitting there saying, hey, I'll donate my ACL, my kid's ACL, my husband's ACL, you know?
Oh,
and you look at, and I'm like, you know, I think some of these people are actually serious.
Oh,
yeah.
For real?
Because they're like,
cadaver ligament, though? Is that the faster recovery? Because you would know this. Is the cadaver?
You want to go sports medicine real quick?
Which one's the quickest recovery?
The problem with the cadaver. So if I was going to get it done, I'd probably get a cadaver because I don't want them taking any of my body part.
Your patella tendon, my hamstring.
But the forces that are placed on a 24-year-old professional athlete that Carson Wentz is, you'd have to have the perfect cadaver tendon because it's going to have to be strong enough to withstand all those forces.
Okay.
So the best tissue that he has as a 24-year-old is his own tissue. So most likely, and I haven't seen the surgical report at this point, but probably patella tendon. Because that's going to have two bony ends, so that's going to be the most secure as opposed to the hamstring. He'll be able to get back to running faster if he has a patella tendon. So my bet would be that he probably went with the patella tendon because
it's his own tissue.
You'd have to have, in that case, the perfect cadaver tendon. It's probably not as strong as his own tissue at that point. If he was older, he was like 40 or something like that, you probably could get one. But that's just, you know, the sports medicine update.
Here's the stuff you didn't think you were going to get on Faith on the Field show this week. You get Hall of Fame conversation.
Wow.
You get sports medicine talk. When we come back, we'll see if we can take it to a whole other level, too. You are listening to Faith on the Field show presented by Eastern University 610 Sports ESPN Radio.
If you shake hands with difference makers around the world, you'll meet alumni from Eastern University in every profession. Our courageous graduates are CEOs, mayors, social entrepreneurs, and Pennsylvania Teacher of the Year finalists. What makes the difference? Eastern alums have been shaped by a powerful combination of academic excellence, Christian values, and professors who truly care. Join our influential community online in Center City or on the main line. Visit eastern.edu/courage.
MedCorp's Asthma and Pulmonary Specialists is a privately owned group located in Turnersville and Linwood, New Jersey. Online, they are MedCorpUSA.com. Dr. Silvey and his staff can diagnose and treat disorders of the lungs. Asthma, especially asthma caused by allergies, COPD, chronic bronchitis, pneumonia, pulmonary hypertension, shortness of breath, and chronic cough. They also treat sleep problems like restless leg syndrome and sleep apnea. Treating sleep apnea has become a huge part of their practice. They have 10 home sleep tests that test for sleep apnea. Testing is recommended if some of the following pertain to you. Someone has told you that you stop breathing while you sleep. You snore loudly and frequently. You wake up choking or gasping. You wake up with headaches, sore throat, or dry mouth. You experience insomnia, unrefreshing sleep, daytime sleepiness or fatigue, difficulty concentrating, memory loss, irritability. You are drowsy while you are driving. You are frequently waking up to use a bathroom. You have a large neck size, 17 inches for men and 16 inches for women. You have a family history of sleep apnea. Call MedCorp's Asthma and Pulmonary Specialists at 856-352-6572. That's for their Turnersville office, and 609-788-8953 for their Linwood office.
Dan Higgins Wood Flooring is the number one retailer of wood flooring in South Jersey. Dan Higgins Wood Flooring has better pricing and service for flooring than the big box stores. Plus, you would be supporting a local business in the community since 1985. Dan Higgins Wood Flooring provides support for your do-it-yourself project, including expert advice and free equipment rental. Contractors can bring their customers to Dan Higgins Wood Flooring showrooms in Medford and Sicklerville. Special discounts are available for contractors and builders. They offer free local job site delivery, and installation services are also available. They have the best and most popular brands, including Bruce, Armstrong, Mirage, Johnson, Mercier, and more. Check out their website at danhiggins.com or call Dan Higgins Wood Flooring at 609-953-7766.
Hi, I'm attorney Alfonso Gambone. A criminal charge is something that hopefully you and your family will never have to deal with. This can be one of the most difficult times in a person's life, and it's important to understand your options. Whether it's an illegal gun, drug charge, or a DUI, understanding your options is the first step toward a good outcome. If you are charged with a crime in Pennsylvania, visit my website, gambonelaw.com, or call my office at 215-755-9000. I've not only defended thousands of people just like you, I've written 3 books on criminal defense based on that experience that I want you to have at no cost. These books explain the basics behind criminal charges and offer the most effective defense strategies to fight and win your case. So before we sit down and discuss your criminal problem, get your free books now. Visit GamboneLaw.com or call my office at 215-755-9000.
And welcome back to Faith on the Field Show, presented by Eastern University. I'm Rob Motti with Doug Horton and Pastor Robert Pinckney, the Phillies team chaplain. We are in week 34, and if you've missed any of our previous episodes, you can catch up on iTunes, subscribe to Faith on the Field Show, and download, listen. You can listen at your convenience, in the car, wherever you're going, whatever you're driving, sitting home, whatever you're doing. Just download and subscribe, and send us a review, too. How many reviews? We got to get some good reviews. Bad reviews. Tell us really how you feel.
Tell us what you want to hear too. That's always a good thing, right?
Yeah, so, you want more Billy Wagner, you want more baseball, you want more hockey. Somebody said to me, hey, we got to get some basketball players in there. I said, all right, how about some, somebody asked me, hey, how about some pro wrestlers? You consider that a sport? Wrestling. You know what? I get some pro wrestlers.
Well, we have
in here.
You know, the Olympics, right? Olympics are coming up. So we had, the Olympics are coming
oh,
up.
Oh, the Olympics.
So we
oh,
had
okay.
Women's ice hockey, Gigi.
Yeah, we had Gigi Marvin.
Marvin, yeah. So
wow.
We've also had American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah.
You know, stars on there. We can have a couple more of those.
We could be versatile.
Pro absolutely. Wrestling.
Ted DiBiase, remember the Million Dollar
yes.
Man? He's a pastor now.
Get
wow.
out of here.
The Million
That's
Dollar
some
Man.
Good knowledge
is,
by you,
he
Rob.
Is, he's a pastor.
Wow.
Maybe we got to reach out to the
I
Million
think,
Dollar
yeah.
Man,
I, that'd be
right?
Phenomenal.
Now, if Ric Flair was a believer, because he's coming back to Wing Bowl.
Is it? No way.
Y'all seen
is
that?
He really?
He's coming back to Wing
oh,
Bowl.
Oh, Ric Flair is my all time favorite.
He's the best.
Yeah, see, now we got to get into wrestling talk. See, my five favorite wrestlers of all time, I will go Ric Flair, You got to go The Rock. The Rock's just a... I do it for the interviews.
Okay.
Like, whoever's my favorite interview guys. Uh-huh. Chris Jericho, I thought, was always a great interview.
Okay.
I was...
You know Hulk fan? Hulkamania?
Yeah, I was... I mean, Hulk, he would be on that. There's Ryan back there tearing his shirt off. You'd have to...
I was like the Junkyard Dog, you know? That was always one of my favorites.
May he rest in peace.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Tony Atlas.
So, remember Mr. Tony USA?
Yes,
remember his tag team partner?
I don't remember.
SD Special Delivery Jones. Used to always lose, right? He used to all.
He was the guy that fought the champion that knew they was going to win or something.
Yeah, exactly. So
that was a good. That was a good time in pro wrestling when we were kids, man. That was good.
That was fun. But okay. Once we get one of these wrestlers on our show, we can add him to this list that we have.
Here's the thing. I think the most important thing is, you know, sometimes our show changes a little bit. You know, if you're on Facebook Live, our radio show is going to be on now Sundays from 12 to 1. So if you're catching us on the radio, thank you for doing that. But you can take the podcasts anywhere. So I think you could share it out to people that you think might need, you know, the topic that we're talking about for the day. Or
whether they're a struggling Christian like we talked about today.
Or hopefully good kids. You know, kids want to listen to something good. You know, my kids are always watching YouTube and they're watching all these Netflix shows and everything. You know, they have their headphones on. They're watching their phone. So put a little podcast on for them in the car, you know?
And I feel that we talked about perspective. It's not trying to set people up for if the Eagles lose this game to the Giants, which is coming up in a few hours, and they lose that game, have the right perspective. But I think they'll win that game. But if people out there need that right perspective, need to look at, if you see somebody that you think is really so into sports more than anything else, and they're neglecting their family, and they're neglecting their wife, and they're not spending enough time with their kids, and they're spending more time worrying about fantasy football playoffs. I just got knocked out of fantasy football playoffs.
Martin Roach just beat me. I just got knocked out too.
Yeah,
so,
I'm done. I'm out.
I'm enjoying not having to worry about it.
I think it's so liberating, right? Going into a weekend when you don't have to check to see if, like,
I'm so excited.
I'm going to tell you how bad it was last weekend, okay? There was a game that was Giants and Cowboys, and it was a blowout at that point. And I'm paying attention for Sterling Shepard because I need a couple catches to get some points out of it. Like, it's a 30-10 game in the fourth quarter. How terrible is that? Mm. And I'm like, oh, just throw some garbage.
Yeah, some big long touchdowns from Dallas that was scoring there. But, you know, I had your boy on my fantasy team last week, Tom Brady, dropping a big 10 spot.
Yeah, it was a bad.
It was bad, man. Tom Brady let me down.
He let people down. So we've had Clayton Kershaw, Carson Wentz, Mike Schmidt, Adam Wainwright, Coach Dabo Sweeney, Deshaun Watson, so many more, including Pastor Levi Lusco, Newsboys drummer Duncan Phillips on the show in the past. So faithonthefieldshow.com. You can also find us and like us on Facebook. We're out of time already, guys. I want to thank Eastern University. I want to thank all our sponsors, Tree Awareness, Rick Santella from Morgan Stanley, Dan Higgins, Wood Flooring, Dr. Sylvie and MedCore, Asthma and Pulmonary Specialist, Catalyst Outdoor, Pastor Scott Foreman, Bree Grignano, our interns, Dakota Boring and Sal Tortora, our wives, Remy, Chris, and Dana Pinkney.
All right.
For producer Ryan Lennis back there. Thank you, Ryan. For Doug Horton, we hope Pastor Kyle Horner comes back nice and refreshed.
Birthday tomorrow for Kyle.
From Florida with a nice tan. Thank you to Pastor Rob Pinkney for filling in. I am Rob Motti reminding you, make a difference. Be a blessing.